Rob Sergianek, Matt Tidcom. We are Footy Roundup. Matty, we're back and we're going to get right into some MLS news. Starting off with TFC, what are your thoughts on what the Reds have been doing recently?
Well, I think first of all, straight up, Rob, they had a much needed win nearly a week ago now against Montreal in their last game. 2-0 road victory. It was really needed. They hadn't won in four games going into that game. They were coming off the absolute hammering by DC United on the road.
That game was disgusting. It was so bad to watch.
It's everything we've come to expect from TFC the last 7 years.
Even the epic Hägglund own goal.
Oh, just so bad. I mean, TFC have, like, for the most part, they played pretty well all season long, but that was by far their worst performance of the year. So coming out of that to then go straight to Montreal, who, yeah, they're bottom of the league, but it's a road game. You never know what happens. It's TFC, as much as we hate to say it.
And it's extremely cliche, but, I mean, rivalry games, you see it like in NFL football and divisions. You kind of just throw the record out, too.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, but TFC went in there, and they hammered Montreal. 2-0 road win. I think one thing that Reds fans were delighted to see is that Gilberto had a great game. He scored an absolute cracker only 11 minutes into the game with a beautiful volley that hit the crossbar, bounced all over the place, and flew into the net. It's nice to see him actually get a legitimate good goal. It's only his third goal of the season. I mean, we all know how much of a disappointment he's been for TFC.
He had a beauty free kick, though, too. And him and Defoe had that riff over the shot, and then Defoe was laughing afterwards.
Right. But, you know, it's good that Gilberto got on the scoreboard. So, you know, the Reds went up 1-0 early, which was huge because, after, obviously, like I said, after their performance in their last four games, it was big to get that first goal early and get ahead. And then, you know, the second, they controlled the game. I mean, in the second half, Luke Moore makes it 2-0. Michael Bradley, I think, had one of his best games in a TFC shirt. And his through ball to Oduro, who then great played that. Oduro's played really, really well the last month.
Yeah.
He's played really, really well. He's really coming into his own and the player we expect him to see every week. And I'll admit, he probably delayed the pass across to Luke Moore a little too long, and it was fortunate it got to Moore in the end, who bundled it in for 2-0. But TFC were one of the best ones in the season. They were really, really good.
Where does Montreal go from here? Like, what can they take out of what's left of the season? Is there anything they can do to try to build towards next season? Maybe looking at some of the younger guys tinkering with formation, trying to see whose heart's actually in it and who wants to stay. I wonder, as a professional, I mean, you want to hope that they stay motivated. It's their job, but it's got to be challenging for a coach to do that.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like, for me, I would say, you know, this season's been over like 6-8 weeks now for them. It's been over for a long, long time. So I would just start running the young boys out there, see what they got, tinker around it. You know, it doesn't matter if you get hammered 4-0 really right now. I mean, they're going nowhere. So you may as well see what you have, see what your youth has. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, they're not doing much.
They're
right?
Almost pulling the Ashley Cole, relaxing on a beach now, huh?
Right, yeah, geez.
So next up for the Reds, they're off to Columbus in a rivalry
big game.
Yeah, against the Crew. You know, both teams fighting for, you know, playoff seeding and position. I would think a tie here, if Toronto could nick it, would be a pretty good result on the road.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be. I think the big part here is whether Jermaine Defoe plays or doesn't play. He didn't play in the All-Star game this week, which we will touch on momentarily, which, you know, and he didn't play against DC United either. So
could have used them.
Against Montreal, I should say.
DC United. He actually had a couple of the controversial twice.
DC United.
Two of them, yeah.
Yeah, so sorry, he did play against DC, but Montreal he didn't play against. And then obviously the All-Star game. So hopefully if he comes back, that would be a big boost. But, you know, TFC are third in the East right now, Rob. Columbus are fifth. So, you know, TFC, they got to avoid defeat here, in my opinion.
Yeah, you got to keep some kind of positive momentum going
right after
a really rough stretch. You don't want to follow up a big win with a loss right after.
No, not at all. And for Montreal, they play Philadelphia next, who are seventh in the East. So good chance for Philadelphia to move up the table in the East and get back into their playoff hunt as well.
Matty, switching to the West, the Whitecaps. Four straight draws for this team. The Chicago-Vancouver game, I wrote a game report on that. That had to be one of the most dull games I've ever seen in soccer. I mean, we're big soccer nuts. I can see, you know, quality and appreciate a good, you know, chance-driven, offensively creative 0-0 draw. This was anything but that. I think the first shot on goal is in the 17th minute, and it was basically a dribbler that the goalie collected. It was really, really painful to watch. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Vancouver's still picking up points. The problem I see is, you know, draws in and of themselves aren't going to be enough to get you over that hump into that playoffs when other teams are picking up three.
That's, you know, that's a maximum of 12 points you can take, and you have four. I mean, in a way, I mean, you may as well just say 1-1, drew 1, and lost 2. I mean,
yeah, at the end of the day.
I mean, you know, mentally it's good you haven't been beaten in four games. That's a good sign. But at the same time, it's like, all right,
you haven't
boys,
tasted victory either.
We need to start winning some games. I've always, you know, drawing games is good. Don't get me wrong. And I will, every day of the week, we'll take an away point.
Yeah.
You know, like, for the most part, 9 times out of 10, I always take an away point.
I mean, there's context to the draws, too, who you're playing, like, what form they're in. Yeah, it all matters. But they have a huge game this weekend against Sporting KC. I would think desperately they want to get on the in the win column in this matchup.
I agree, but I think they'll take a draw in this game and move it to 5 straight. Cause
how many draws can you get in a row?
But KC are flying. I mean, we went to the TFC-KC game a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, Kansas City are—they're so good. I mean, Graham Zusi is phenomenal.
Oh, the ponytailed wonder! Yeah, he's solid.
So good. So I think Vancouver would actually take a draw in this game, but yeah, at the end of the day, Rob, like you said, you know, either they've either got to start attacking better or defending better, because one of them isn't working quite as well as it needs to be. So, and Vancouver are always exciting to watch. You know, they like to get forward, which is good, and maybe that's the problem, is that they get forward too much and it leaves holes at the back, because their games are 3-2.
Yeah, they tend to be very wide open.
Like it's very rare you see a Vancouver game that's like 0-0 or 1-0. So, you know, at the end of the day, they got to figure out one way or another that we got to either attack better or defend better so that they can actually start turning these draws into wins.
I think they need to go back to playing to their strengths and attacking more. What was concerning for me in that, not so much that it was a draw per se or 0-0, it's just that they created almost nothing.
Right.
And like Pedro Morales tried, you know, he scuffed a couple of chances from distance, but they really didn't look threatening at any point.
If you don't shoot, you don't score.
Yeah, that's true. Following Sporting KC, they do have Chivas on the road, and I think we would hope that if the fifth draw happens, it ends at that game.
Yeah, well, hopefully it turned into a win, not a loss in the match.
Yeah. So, Maddie, the MLS All-Star game went between the MLS All-Stars and Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
So, the All-Stars came away with the 2-1 victory here.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Like, these All-Star games, the MLS one is weird because you end up playing like a major European team who kind of half-assed the game because they don't really all that care that much, and they throw out a few star players, but they also throw out some guys that don't really, just some fringe team players. So it's hard to really judge how good of a victory this is. But I guess for MLS, it's good. They beat Bayern Munich 2-1. There are some two cracking goals in this game. Bayern Munich went 1-0 up through Wonder Boy Robert Lewandowski, who continues to do amazing things. I've been watching a few of his highlights from some other preseason games, and he's scoring goals that should be illegal. I mean, this goal he scored against MLS and against the MLS was great, but he's also scored another preseason goal where I'm trying to tell you how he scored this goal, and I don't think there were words for it. It's something you have to see. It's incredible. The Sport Bible, it's a Facebook page and Twitter page, is where you can see a lot of good preseason highlights, and that's where
how
I
much
saw
you get paid for that plug.
I got nothing for that. I'm just giving some love to those guys because you see some great preseason highlights you wouldn't normally see. So, but Lewandowski, great goal, and then Bradley Wright Phillips. I mean, the guy who was ran out of English football for the most part because he couldn't really seem to get a job, and then he comes over to New York Red Bulls, and he scored an absolute thunderbolt. And then, I mean, it was fitting in the end, Rob, that Landon Donovan, 70th minute, he bundles home the winner for the MLS All-Stars. So.
And then promptly actually announces his retirement.
Right, which...
Well, I guess isn't taking effect until the end of the actual MLS season,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, end of 2014, he said he's going to retire as a professional soccer player.
At 32?
Yeah, we were doing a bit of research just before we started, and we were like, we couldn't believe he's only 32.
International made sense. I mean, he wasn't selected for the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Early 30s, you see that sometimes.
The MLS part does surprise me. I don't know. I would imagine he's going into broadcasting. I mean, he did some World Cup stuff. I can't imagine he's just going to walk away entirely. I imagine he's going into broadcasting, but... You know, he's MLS's all-time top goal scorer. He's the United States all-time top goal scorer.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got something lined up. I mean, when you see a guy like Alexi Lalas still kicking around, like how many people this day and age don't even know who he is?
I'll be honest. When I moved out here to Canada and I saw him on ESPN broadcast, I was like, I have no idea who this dude is.
I'm dating myself. I remember him from World Cup 94.
Well, there you go. I don't remember that. I was 4 years old in 1994.
I'm not telling you how old I was.
But you know, like Donovan, Rob, like... 105 MLS goals in 229 games, and for the USA has 157 in 156 appearances. And I think the thing with Donovan, Rob, is that it's a shame in a way he never really tested himself in Europe. Mm-hmm. He started his career at Bayer Leverkusen.
I mean, not legitimately, I guess.
No, not really, because I got it down here. He started his career at Bayer Leverkusen's second team. He did okay there. Then went to the first team, played one season. Then he came over to the US, and he went back on loan spells, if you remember, to Bayern Munich for like 6 games. And he went to Everton.
Everton's what I remember,
in 2010 and 2012. And he was...
For a coke and a smile, basically.
Pretty much not effective. I think he maybe had one goal in maybe a dozen to 20 games. I mean, he didn't do much. So, I don't know. Maybe that tells us something about the quality of player he was outside of the States. But I, at the end of the day, I mean, he's had a great career.
You'd have to consider him, I would assume, the greatest American player.
Yeah, yes, I would. Yeah.
We have to. It's worth mentioning, Matt. I don't know if you saw the post game kerfuffle between Caleb Porter coaching MLS All Stars and, you know, my not favorite character in the world, Pep Guardiola. Yeah. I think he just kind of showed his temper and imbecilic nature again. He was frustrated, apparently, with, I think, two or three of the tackles from the MLS side in the second half and decided, under his own volition, to take it out on Porter for whatever reason, as if a guy coaching a collection of all-star players has any control over them like it's his own team. And after the game, you know, Porter tried to follow him and kind of, you know, squash this perceived beef, and he just finger-wagged at him like he was a misbehaving dog. It was extremely bizarre and, I think, extremely disrespectful.
The finger wag is...
Was it Dikembe Mutombo? Don't come in my house, or...
Get that out of here. Like, the finger wag is... It's so basic, but it carries so much weight behind what it really means.
Oh, in some ways, it's almost worse than a finger. It's like you're premeditating it.
Like, I think when people give you the finger, you kind of laugh at it now. But the finger wag is like, oh, you actually have some beef here. And I didn't like it. I mean, it's a friendly match for a star, and...
But, I mean, at the end of the day, too, Matty, even if he thought the tackles were a bit hard, even if he thought, for whatever nonsensical reason, that Porter had something to do with it, it's still soccer and it's still sports. Like, if you're concerned about injuries, I know it's preseason, you don't want your stars to go down, but why get on a plane? Why play anything? Why do anything? Like, you still have to play the game. Yeah, stuff happens.
You can't just play the game at 60% and just be, all right, boys, no tackles today. It's like, you know, if you want to play the NFL, like, all right, we're just doing touch tackling today. Come on, you got to play as you play the game, and...
Maybe it's harsh, but in my estimation, if you feel that passionately about it, then just don't come here and don't play the game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I just don't like the fact that he was so adamant about not shaking his hand. Like, come on, man. Just like you're a legend in the sport. At the end of the day, you're one of the greatest managers of all time. Just, you know, shake his hand. Like you said, Porter doesn't exactly control what his players can and can't do when it's not his own team. I didn't like it, but. You know, I guess that European mentality sometimes is...
Maybe it's just his ego, because he's like, I came all the way down here and then ended up losing to these guys.
Right, but I mean, Bayern Munich also played some other MLS teams in just regular preseason games as well, which... I don't know how you feel about this, Rob. Like, all these European teams coming over and just playing MLS teams in the middle of their season. I mean, you know, TFC played Tottenham recently, and... I don't know. It's hard to get excited for these games, especially if, like, you know, is it really that much worth it for these MLS teams, in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, as a soccer purist, I don't really like it. I don't like upsetting, you know,
it's
the flow of the regular schedule and mixing in a friendly when the
like
matches are competitive.
It's like taking advantage of the one league that has a different schedule than you.
Yeah. No, I'm not a big fan, but I do understand why they do it. I mean, when you're marketing names and stars, even if they don't play, you know, a Tottenham or, you know, an AC Milan, a Bayern Munich, it has name recognition and cash to the average fan, whereas, you know, Sporting KC or Chicago Fire, not to be disrespectful to the MLS, they don't. How many people could name, you know, a player on that team?
Right.
So I guess a lot of it is a money grab in a sense.
That's
yeah,
exactly
they're trying
what it
to
is.
Get, you know, more exposure and maybe develop a good, like, little networking relationship with, like, a European powerful team that maybe can help them in some regard in the future.
Yeah.
From a business perspective, I get it. From a soccer perspective, basically, I don't like it.
Well, I mean, it's something that's not going to go away until MLS decides to change their season, which I think, I mean, this is a discussion for another day, something I think they should do. But, you know, I guess we better get used to seeing Tottenham coming over here, because of that Defoe deal, they signed that agreement to play preseason games every year. So.
Yeah, with TFC.
Yeah, it's just the way it is.
Matty, switching gears now over to the,
Premier League.
Premier League, yeah, your home and native. What are your expectations for this season? I was reviewing some of the names and the transfers and how the teams did last year. We know Van Gaal coming over to Man U. We both agree that that's going to have a big impact.
Yes.
I think it's going to be a two-horse race between Chelsea and Man United.
Yeah, I fought long and hard about this. I mean, from my opinion, there's five teams who have a chance at winning the league. There's obviously Arsenal, Man United, Man City, Chelsea, and Liverpool. I admittedly, straight away, when I started thinking about who I think is going to win the league this year, which, by the way, the Premier League season starts a week tomorrow, today being Friday, so it's August 16th when the league starts.
Exciting time. I guess it's our junior World Cup fix now.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's the good thing about the World Cup is it makes the offseason in soccer so much shorter. You know, less than a month, we're already back into, straight into the Premier League season again. So straight away, I said, I don't think you can give it to Liverpool. As much as I'd love to see Liverpool win a Premier League, for me, Rob, I'm picking Man United to win the league, and I have a number of reasons why. So hear me out and let me know what you think. First of all, Louis van Gaal.
Agreed. Yeah.
I mean, end of story. Next one for me is that they were so bad last year that they are going to be so motivated
extra
to do
chip
well.
On the shoulder, you
like,
think?
You think Rooney and Van Persie and Welbeck and all these guys are, you know, Juan Mata are all okay with getting absolutely pummeled all of last season? Yeah, I don't think so. The other big thing for me, Rob, and every now and then this might actually not be a bad thing, is obviously Man United are not playing in Europe next year. That means they're going to have a hell of a lot lesser games to be playing.
That's a good point,
you know, it's not even like they're playing Europa League. They are physically not playing in Europe next season. So, you know, that takes away six group games. And then, obviously, you know, United are almost guaranteed to move on to at least, you know, into the next round. So that makes it eight games, if not into the quarters, to make it 10, so on and so forth. So that's going to save them a lot of legs there. So I think that's a big part of why I think they're going to win the league this year, is they're going to have so much rest. You know, they can focus more on maybe winning the FA Cup. If they want to focus on the Carling Cup, they can, though that's by and by. No one really cares about that trophy too much anymore. But that's why, for me, United are going to win. Louis van Gaal, they're not in Europe, and boy, are they going to be motivated.
I can't disagree on the points that you do make. Starting off with Liverpool, I agree with you as well. I mean, from each of our perspectives, we have a couple of our own fan favorites on that club now, so we'd love to see them do well. But last year they had, Luis Suarez there, and they weren't able to get over the hump. Stevie G's a year older. You can't expect them to, you know, have much of a better opportunity than they had last year.
Ricky Lambert is one of my boys, you know, Bristol Rovers guy, but he's not going to score 30 goals like Luis Suarez.
I read something, Jamie Carragher, saying that Dan Lovren could take over for Stevie G when he retires as captain.
Let's settle down there.
I'm just quoting. I didn't say it. He is a quality defender, he'll have to prove himself over in Anfield for
Stevie
sure.
Stevie G will have the captaincy of Liverpool until the day he retires.
I thought you were going to say until the day he dies.
That too as well, to be honest. I mean, he's that much of a legend up there.
So hear me out on Chelsea, Matt. They're my pick, and not by a super convincing margin. The one concern I have with Man United is the lack of a true number 10 string puller. I know Juan Mata's very good, and he also did very well at Chelsea. I just felt like they were going to go out and get somebody. Maybe Rakitic, but like somebody like that.
Herrera's come in from Bilbao, who I think is going to be a very good player. But I think he's kind of has a similar role to what Juan Mata has, which is just kind of like to play around the striker. This is the
playing
thing
for
United.
Striker almost,
you've got
Van
Persie, Rooney, Welbeck. Javier Hernandez is somehow still there.
Oh,
even
it's
though,
so forward heavy.
Even though he just wants to go. Juan Mata's there now. Obviously, who was it we just mentioned? Herrera is there. You know, that's six guys who can get forward and score goals for you. So,
how are you feeling about the leadership on the back line with that?
Yeah,
Man United
that's
now?
The problem. that's the one bit that concerns me. You know, there's no Vidic now. Patrice Evra's gone to Juve. As an English guy, I like it a lot because the back line is going to have some of Chris Smalling, Phil Jones, Johnny Evans, and they obviously brought in Luke Shaw from Southampton.
I know Luke Shaw, you're always talking about that guy.
Yeah, I do like Luke Shaw. He's young, and yeah, he's inexperienced. He doesn't have a lot of high-level quality football. I mean, he hasn't played much for England, went to the World Cup. As an England fan, I love it because it's just England's back line is almost made up from this Man United team, which is great. But yeah,
well, I mean,
you saw
the kind of
so
success
young.
Spain had with Barcelona and a lot of guys playing together too.
Right, and
let's not jump the gun, but you know what I'm saying.
You know, off the top of my head right away, the only guy I can think of outside of United, I mean, Gary Cahill at Chelsea is, you know, guaranteed to be starting center half.
So that segues nicely into why I'm picking Chelsea.
There you go.
The strong defensive core is back. You know, Ivanovic is still there. Cahill, you just mentioned. They replaced striker. They improved tenfold. I mean, Diego Costa comes in from Atletico. I guess bye-bye to the Eto and most likely Fernando Torres days, which were just not up to snuff. I think their creative fulcrum is fantastic. They brought in Cesc Fabregas. That adds to what they already have with Eden Hazard, which I think is the two types of players that Man United is lacking. Yep. And not to mention they have Andre Schürrle up front, who had a pretty nice little tournament himself.
Absolutely.
And the heart of the old Chelsea squad is back, Didier Drogba. He's not the same player he used to be by any stretch, but I think he can really motivate the guys, and he can still be quite impactful as a sub off the bench. So I got Chelsea winning it, Matty.
And I mean, also as well, they let David Luiz go to PSG for 50 million, which is highway robbery right now.
Yeah.
But they replaced him with Philippe Luiz from Atletico Madrid, which is a really good replacement.
Nice pickup,
which I do like. And I have a couple of other guys like looking forward. You've got Andre Schürrle, Marco van Ginkel, Mohamed Salah,
Thibaut Courtois
as
too.
Well. I mean, goalkeeper. I mean, they got to figure that out because they got one of those guys, you know, Petr Cech or Courtois sitting on the bench all season, which is. I mean, I've said this before, I would take Courtois now. I mean, I think Cech is getting older, and since his head injury, which I know is years and years ago, I still don't think he's quite got back to where he is. But
we didn't even factor in Oscar. He's pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah, he's not bad. So
when he's like your third best creative force, I think that's what separates Chelsea and Man United in my eyes. I think there's more pure and true creativity in the middle of the park for Chelsea, and I think they'll just nick Man United.
I guess just quickly looking at Arsenal and Man City here as to why maybe we don't think they're going to win. Arsenal is just, I just don't think they're ever consistent enough. I do love the Alexis Sanchez signing.
Me too, yeah.
I really do like that. But, you know, Lucas Podolski, I don't think has been up to value since he's joined the club. I just don't have the confidence for a whole season they can put together. Like, Mesut Ozil was so good for them when he first joined, and he kind of fell away a little, and he had a good World Cup, so maybe his confidence is back. But they lost Bakary Sanger to Man City, which is a
rumors
big loss
of Vermaelen might be leaving too.
Yeah, I've hearing that. Per Mertesacker has always been hot and cold at times with Arsenal as well. I do like the Mathieu Debuchy signing from Newcastle to replace Sanger at right back. The other thing as well is I just wonder how well Giroud and Sanchez can work together. They're two very opposite kind of players. And I don't know, you know, if Wenger wants to use both up front together or use Sanchez behind Giroud. So I think there's just a few too many questions for my money here.
I agree with the question marks. I think the best thing that you brought up, and I most agree with, Matty, is, for lack of better terms, you almost don't know what you're going to get from these players. Right. They're extremely hot and cold. Podolski, Ozil, Giroud, one game they're dominant, the next...
Santi Cazorla.
Yeah, they just disappear for stretches, and you wonder where they are, and then bam, here comes a brace.
You got Theo Walcott, who, you know, has been out for so long with that ACL injury. He needs to come back and start playing well. I think the one player who needs to have a big year is Jack Wilshere. I think he really needs to take that next step, kind of like how Tom Cleverley does for United. I think Wilshere is a better player than Cleverley right now, but Wilshere really needs to take that next standing, especially if, like, Steven Gerrard announced his English retirement. Jack Wilshere fits the guy to come in and replace him in the squad, so he needs to have a big season in the midfield for Arsenal.
What about Man City, Matt? I agree with you as well. I don't have them in the top two, I'll be honest with you right now. I have Chelsea, Man United 1-2. What is it that you think is lacking with Man City? I mean, for me, I think they're getting a little long in the tooth. I think that, you know, the previous season, it was more of a case in some ways of Liverpool giving it away, maybe, than Man City outwardly taking it. To their credit, they got it done. But what do you think is lacking with that squad?
I think, first of all, the one thing about the defending champions is they actually didn't change anything.
Yeah.
Which, believe it or not, is actually sometimes a good thing.
Could be, yeah.
Because a lot of teams tend to sometimes just move on and
dump. Like Bayern and, changing everything when they don't really need
Bayern
to.
Yeah, Bayern always seem to change everything. I think Man City are going to be right up there. I think they might come second, actually, behind United. This Premier League title is going to be so close this year. It's just, for me, can they stay a little healthy at times? Dzeko can sometimes get injured. Sergio Aguero is dealing with an injury during the World Cup. Defensively, you know, Vincent Kompany is still so, so good. And it's just what, you know, Pablo Zabaleta is getting up there in years. Gal Cliche is not exactly getting younger. Michael Richards has just been a failure the last couple of seasons, which is why they brought in Bakary Sanger. So I guess I'm questioning a little defensively what they have. Up front, you know, Negredo has been good but not great for my money.
Dzeko is fantastic.
Dzeko is really good. I do like Dzeko. And I mean, they got David Silva and Jesus Navas, Sergio Aguero. I mean, don't get me wrong, this is an extremely good side. I just don't think, you know, because they are going to be playing Champions League, their focus might be elsewhere, because Man City's owner has said time and time again he wants to win the Champions League. It's something they haven't done, and now might be the time they do it. So I think their focus might be a little off for that as well. I think honestly it's more because Man United have so much time off and are so motivated to do better, which is why I have them pipping City for the title.
Okay, so I have Liverpool and Arsenal. Yeah, Liverpool and Arsenal to me, I think are clearly a cut below the other three teams.
Yeah, I would, if I was to
almost top, lump them in with Tottenham, not quite, but
not
almost.
Quite that far. Yeah, I would, you know, if
Tottenham's automatically six just
every year, right? I mean, for me, it's gonna be United, City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Spurs, top six. And maybe Everton seventh, probably.
I agree with you, except that I'm flipping Man United to second and Chelsea to first, and then the rest I'm the same. Matty, how about the Spanish league? I mean, Atletico, we know what they did last season. Real Madrid, they pumped up their squad big time, as did Barcelona. I like Atletico as a team, and I think they can cause some problems for both these teams, but
they've lost too much.
Yeah, I don't think they have enough to compete with the absolute ridiculous amount of depth and star power of Barca and Real.
I feel bad for Atletico because they've lost, you know, a lot of their good players. We mentioned Philippe Luis, Diego Costa's gone too. So that I just can't see that. I don't think Atletico are even going to be close this year. I think they could be 15, 20 points back.
But still third.
Yeah, which is kind of depressing for La Liga, considering it's meant to be such a great league, which it is, don't get me wrong. But it is.
I think they like those star power battles, though, in Spain.
They do. They love this Barcelona-Madrid thing.
So how do you separate these two teams? I had a really hard time.
By a coin toss, probably?
I mean, yeah, it's like, I think offensively, in some ways, Barca may have more, but then I'm saying that, and the other team has, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, and they brought in James Rodriguez, and I'm saying that Barca has more offense.
Yeah, Toni Kroos.
I feel almost ridiculous saying that, but when you look what they can throw up top, you know, Messi, Suarez, Rakitic came in to play off behind them. Neymar, it's like the fourth name I name on Barcelona.
I'm laughing.
It has to be a coin flip, doesn't it?
Because you're reading all these names, like, you know, all the guys you just rattled off, and I'm sat here looking at Real Madrid, and it's like Rodriguez, Bell, Ronaldo, Toni Kroos, Benzema, Isco, Di Maria, Modric, Xavi Alonso.
It's an embarrassing amount of riches.
It's crazy. I'm going to pick Real Madrid just because it's
Because you expect it to come up tails, or?
Yeah, well, exactly. Tails never fails, right?
Can you make a legit case on paper, I think, that these are the two best teams in the world?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I Bayern Munich, which
like, compare
we'll
either
of
these teams
second.
To Chelsea or Man U, who are strong in their own right, and you got to say these two teams have more.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the only team who would give you a run for your money would be Bayern, which we'll touch on in just a minute. Yeah, you would have to say these are the two best teams in the world, like you said, on paper. I think Chelsea, City and United are there, but they're like that 3-7-ish range with Bayern Munich and Dortmund and maybe Juve, Roma as well in Serie A.
I think Real could win the Champions League again.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, and they're better. They're you know, we said like teams often change what they did. Real Madrid stuck with what they have, and then they just went out and brought James Rodriguez and Toni Kroos.
On top of the roster that just won.
Just no big deal, right? I mean, this is a coin toss, don't get me wrong. It's always going to come down to the four times they play. Can they just make sure they get through all their other games? Real Madrid for me, Rob, but it's not going to be by much.
I'm sharing it with you. I'm 55% confident on Real Madrid for the simple fact that they have the same guys coming back and they know each other a little better. I think Barca's players are great, but you got to see how Suarez acclimatizes himself. You got to see how Rakitic fits in there. I mean, they're great players, and I'm sure they'll figure it out, but even a brief amount of time of figuring it out might give enough of a leg up to Real to take it.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you there. Last one, Rob. Quickly, we have Bundesliga. It's a two-horse race again. It's going to be Bayern or Dortmund. Same old every year with this league, it seems.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going with angry Pep and Bayern to win that one.
Yeah, I'm with you on Bayern, too. I mean, the big thing here is Lewandowski just bolting Dortmund to join Bayern. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Bayern bringing in Ciro Immobile. I made that clear a few weeks ago in our transfer roundup show. But Immobile is still young. He doesn't replace. He does replace Lewandowski on the field. Does he replace his goal production? Probably not quite right away. So that's my big thing. Dortmund still have some elite players. Marco Reus is one of the top players in the world for me. Henrik Mkhitaryan is another great player. Mats Hummels, I've already made it clear what I think of this guy. He's best defender in the world for my money. But long story short, I don't think they're going to quite be able to keep up with Bayern this year again.
Yeah, it's Bayern all the way for me. Just almost running out of time here, Matt. Quick, super early look at Champions League. I'll tell you right now, I'd be super surprised if Real Madrid or Barca aren't lifting the trophy.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you there. Like I said, I think Bayern are probably going to be up there again. As for the English sides, I'm sure there might be a semi-final run in one of them.
I can't see the Italian sides.
We'll get to it, Serie A, in the weeks coming. Because their season starts later than all the other leagues. Juve and Roma are probably their two favorites this year. But, you know, I mean, I'm a Roma fan, but they're not quite good enough to win the Champions League yet. So, my three favorites right now would be Barca, Madrid, and Bayern.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. So, Maddie, that's it for today. We are shutting down shop here at Footy Roundup for a couple of weeks. School's closing off. We get a much-needed break, I guess,
nice
for both
break,
of us.
Go home, relax a little, catch up with the family
and enjoy some vacation time.
Absolutely.
We'll be back with you after that. Cheers for listening.